Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the films of 1999 from Hooters here in 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Nybart.
And I'm Phyllis Gove.
And with us today, the biggest daddy of them all.
Oh boy, I don't know about that. I'm not offended, I just think it's like stolen valor. I think that's a false title.
Here he is, Griffin Newman. Griffin.
I'm physically small and childless. Yes. You're both bigger than me and a father. I feel wrong to accept this.
I am a big daddy.
You're a big daddy. You can't give that to me.
Well,
I think.
Well, in this movie,
I mean, you're a big daddy in the podcasting
world. You are
realm.
A big daddy in the podcasting world. Yeah, yes. How do you like that?
How does that feel? It feels weird, right?
Yeah.
You guys know it's weird.
We don't know. We're little daddies in the podcast world. You're a big daddy. I mean, we just have to accept it. Accept the dub.
I mean, Kenny and I were talking about this before you got here. Earlier today, we recorded an episode with your co-host.
Yes.
With David Sims. Yes. We did a serious man for
a
Patreon.
A big daddy. He is a very tall man.
A large man with a
young
child.
Yeah, he's a big daddy.
Yes.
And we were just talking about how, like, you know, we've been doing this for 5 years. We're wrapping this up now.
Yeah.
And the fact that we have you and David on this podcast does make us feel like we're at least a part of the family a little bit.
Yeah.
And
A couple of daddies in the family of daddies.
Absolutely. Also, I was trying to do the. Is this my fourth?
Yes.
So I wasn't able to pull off five timers before.
You weren't able to pull off five.
Let's see what we could do, Griffin.
Was
there a Patreon once?
Yes. You did a Patreon. You did a 2009. You came on for Fast and the Furious.
Okay. That was my question.
Yes.
So it's on main feed.
Main feed three.
But here's the thing. Toy Story was two episodes. Muppets from Space.
Correct.
Yes.
Yep.
Then Fast and Furious.
We'll give you the jacket. We will give you the jacket. You broke one record into two episodes.
I filibustered my way into being a five-timer.
It would be our great pleasure to give you the. Actually, let's do the ceremony right now.
But
guys,
I was going
to
say the first one was within the first year.
It was early. It was the second.
Second
year, yeah. Start of two.
It was early. It was early.
Yeah, and you've been a great guest and a great friend of the podcast.
One of my favorite podcasts.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say.
Thank you. Yes. We appreciate that.
And we're sad to hear that's ending. But I also, I mean, it's... you started this, you had the ambition of, like, we're doing all of it.
Yes. And everyone laughed at us.
Of course, but then it gets to this point now where 5 years later, I'm like, why are you guys quitting?
I mean,
and you branched out into these other things. You've done TV in 2009 and all of this. And I'm like... guys, come on. What are you doing here?
You know, the truth is that we had the discussion because, like, there was, I'll be honest, I think we could have, like, squeezed a couple more months out of it if we wanted to, really.
But out of 99.
But, like,
yeah, there's stuff. Like, there's always...
This is a natural conclusion. Sure, yeah. And the movies themselves, which is still the lifeblood of this podcast, was coming to an end.
Well, I mean, there's, like there, for instance, you know, when we have Daniel Waters on in a couple of weeks, we're going to have his list, which includes these French films we never even included, never even considered. So but there are real films.
There are real films
that, you know, that we
are documentaries. There are
documentaries or things that we're not going to get to, but we feel like we've been pretty exhausted and we're also exhausted.
That might
your,
be the more important
your original
point.
Thing. A wide theatrical release in
not
the domestic.
Why?
Okay.
Just had to have a domestic theatrical release. And then we expanded a little bit. We did a couple TV movies. Right. We've done a couple of those. But, like, truly, we've exhausted every film that had a theatrical release in North America, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, unless we randomly missed something. Like, something recently came up that we're like...
Oh, right.
I mean, like, we did Body Shots, which, like, we totally... We totally didn't remember, and then, some things happened. Yes. But.
While that, you guys hadn't done this one yet.
Yes, we held on to this one.
And there were a bunch of options we've been talking about for the last, like, month or two that you had thrown out to me. Mm-hmm. And this one just felt like, well, that's easier if that's on the table. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you threw out a lot of good options to me, but there's the thing with doing my own podcast where it's trying to burn a movie that I think we might do someday.
100%.
And you were down to a collection of, like, some of those are possible. We might get to some of those.
There was
Dugan
there
lost
couple.
March Madness. It felt like that was his one shot to
it,
get
it
on
it felt like
feed.
We talked we talked a little bit about you maybe coming on the 2009 Patreon again for something that could potentially be touched on someday. And then, you know, we when Big Daddy was sort of like, it's been on the list for a while. Kenny and I have sort of been about
Big Daddy is one of the big movies of the year.
It's one of the 10 highest grossing films.
It's exactly. It's a Sandler. And, you know, it was in the period of time, and you know this, Griffin, where, you know, you would have the tentpole every week and, you know, 7 out of 10 would be your big budget things. Yes. And then 3 out of every 10 would be your big actor things.
It's the thing that is depressing looking at the box office of 1999 is it's like, oh, Big Daddy can fully coexist with Phantom Menace.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
And it's not like the final grosses between the two of them are hugely disparate. Yep. Like, obviously, Phantom Menace is humongous.
Yeah.
Big Daddy isn't, like, doing well for a comedy.
No.
Big Daddy's doing, like, Marvel numbers.
And then, I mean, Notting Hill's another example.
Notting Hill, right? Like, Runaway Bride.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
These are things where, like, today would not even get in the stratosphere of a Marvel movie because it's just not even possible.
It's not possible. There's the crazy stat that I'm sure has been said by you guys a thousand times on the show. But we recently, I recently brought up, because it's one of my favorite weirdo box office stats, about this summer, because we did our Eyes Wide Shut episode on Blank Check.
Of course,
Throughout the summer of 1999, I believe this holds from the beginning of May to the end of August.
Sure.
There were only 2 movies that opened at number one, didn't make $100 million.
We never brought this up.
Yeah, I remember Entertainment Weekly saying, like, this is how good this summer
what
was.
What were the two?
The two...
Well, Eyes Wide Shut's one of them.
Correct.
Which it just barely didn't make, right? Like, it was like in the 90s?
It makes like 80, I think. Yeah. So, but it's like steep drop-off. Yeah, maybe even makes a little bit less.
I have no idea what the other one
is. Huge drop-off. And the other one is The Haunting.
Everyone's favorite movie.
But that's the point. You're like, that movie opened really big because it had a big trailer, and they played the ad during the Super Bowl, and then people disliked it, and after the first weekend, it dropped.
Yep.
And Eyes Wide Shut similarly was like toxic word of mouth from the first brush audience. Every other movie just continued to play.
Well,
like things would open big and then just coexist with each other comfortably. Mm-hmm. And it's like, don't worry, Adam, we have $100 million for you.
Yeah.
Julia, we'll give you $100 million twice.
We've, I mean, John Travolta has a movie that makes a shit ton of money.
General's Daughter just quietly, passively making $100 million as like a jury duty movie.
And That you're thinking of
Civil Action.
You're thinking of Civil Action. General's Daughter is a rape movie.
I'm not saying. Let me clarify. I know that. I wasn't saying it's a movie about jury duty.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying America went to see that
as if it were jury duty.
Oh, 100%.
They were like, here's some new Travolta based on a bestseller, an airport book. Yes. And everyone's like, well, yeah, we got to go see that.
That's right. Yes. Every parent in America said this is what we're going to do because, as we've said many times,
you used to just go to quote unquote the movies.
And the poster mm-hmm. of a guy like Travolta, yep. Roberts, mm-hmm. Sandler, mm-hmm. Certainly Cruz, yep. and this time period, Cage, if they have a new movie, the poster is largely just their face.
Yeah. Yep.
Just their face. It's their face in a background and you maybe see 10% of clothes. Mm-hmm. If it's a two-hander, it's two full body shots in a blank yes. void.
Yeah. Yeah. Runaway Jury is just Richard Gere and her. And he's right. holding, it's like,
it's all you needed.
Right. It's all you needed.
And this, you just need Sandler peeing, like, which is
with a child against a wall. Yeah.
And it was that thing. I'm sure we're going to talk about uh-huh. like our relationships to Sandler at this point in time, but it's like 98. Mm-hmm. You have Wedding Singer, which is like, oh, kind of breakthrough for him. Yeah. Decent, like I winter love Wedding hit. Singer. Wedding hit Singer, I think, is his best movie.
Yes.
The Happy Madison.
We'll have this discussion, but I'm with you on that. Yeah.
This is the one that I get close with. There are a couple of the ones I want to talk about, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. Wedding Singer for me is kind of platonic ideal sure, of everything sure. I think a Sandler okay. comedy can be.
Yeah.
Does like surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then like fucking 7 months later, Waterboy decimates. Decimates.
And incredible. Waterboy was, because the thing about Waterboy is.
Yes.
Not good. So
it's funny. I hadn't watched it in a while. I was really excited when you asked mm-hmm. me to do this because I've been rewatching the Sandlers a lot. And that was one I hadn't rewatched. I started rewatching a lot of them at the beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I've stayed on it. I've gone back again, even sure. for the second time, third time in the last 2 years to watch some. Waterboy, for whatever reason, I wasn't rewatching. I think it was because I was a little scared. I didn't want it to not live up to my memory of how much I was losing my fucking shit.
As a child.
In 1998. Yes, right. Yes. And I don't think it's terrible. But it's weird that that's the one that went supernova.
It kills. So that's the. It was weird for me personally. So I love Sandler and love so many Happy Madison offerings. The thing about Waterboy was, I thought that early Happy Madison will not be pre-Happy Madison, and that early Sandler run.
Happy Madison doesn't start until after
Dad.
Right.
Yes. Interesting. But I'm saying let's retroactively lump this in.
Deuce Bigelow, I believe, is the first Happy Madison movie proper.
Right.
So all the pre-Happy
Little
Happy
Nicky
Madison
is his. It's the first Happy Madison with a Sandler vehicle.
So,
right.
So all of that stuff I thought were just murder's row. You have Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, all these incredible films up to and including The Wedding Singer.
Right.
And The Waterboy was the first one in the theater. I'm like, this no longer is for me.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know? And then I think Big Daddy brings it back.
Yeah.
Can I just say, though, it's interesting because I do think you're absolutely right. The 1-2 punch of Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore is what puts him on the map, right?
Right.
But no one talks about Bulletproof.
Well, there's
Airheads, but this is why I'm making the Happy Madison distinction.
Yeah, sure.
Because it's like Billy Madison, he's the auteur.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Happy Gilmore, he's the auteur.
Yeah.
Bulletproof, Airheads, some of these other ones, it's like, he's trying out being in other people's movies.
I love Airheads deeply.
Yeah,
but
I do
that's
as well.
Not a Sandler
joint. That's Sandler in a movie.
Yes.
And he doesn't know if he's going to be the guy in all of his films.
Sure.
And then it's like Wedding Singer kind of synthesizes it because it's like Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, two masterpieces. Mm-hmm. It's like extreme angry man-child, silly noises kind of stuff. The critics are fucking furious about these movies. Lowest common denominator.
Totally.
This is like dumb little boy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Wedding Singer, he's like, oh, can I put like a little emotional maturity into this thing? Can I put myself with another star?
Yeah. That's the big
part. Can there be genuine romance
that's
in this
the thing? Big part of the movie.
That's the huge part.
I pulled in someone else who will co-sign my vision who you guys like.
Right.
Yes.
And in fact, that's his calculation is I'm validating myself with Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm. It arguably is the thing that finally pushes Drew Barrymore 100%. Back into the second wave of her career. It's like a mutually beneficial just jackpot for the two of them.
But
I also feel like Waterboy is like this absurd regression beyond the things that people hated about the first two movies, where it's like, now it's going to be the silliest fucking voice you've ever seen. Yes. The whole movie takes place in Wackadoo Town. What is this premise?
Yes.
And I just remember like seeing the trailer and people were losing their fucking minds. And it was like, I guess this is going to be a hit. And then it comes out. I grew up in New York City.
Sure.
The New York Post, the Daily News, fucking awful rag newspapers. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, I would love this. Had such low journalistic standards that if like something weird happened in movies, it would be the front page story.
Oh, that's great.
Right? Like,
yeah, I know.
Because there's also Tablet, who walked out of a car without their underwear on, whatever. Sure, it's like, to make the first. And I just remember the front page of either, I think it was the Post, that Monday was Adam Sandler, the new $20 million man. And it was an article that was clearly written in 15 minutes on the back of a napkin on a Metro North train before the guy had to fucking submit it to his editor. And it was just, this guy inexplicably has now become so huge that he is in the Travolta, Cage, Roberts.
100%.
It was immediate.
People looked at him the way we look at guys like Logan Paul now.
Yes.
Which is the, how the fuck is this happening? What is wrong with all of you people?
Yes. Right. Yep. But not only that, you're like, Carrey is the first $20 million man in Hollywood, right? He's the first guy to get a $20 million upfront salary for a movie. That's on Cable Guy.
But the old seem to get that. They seem to understand that.
Well, it felt like they always were like, oh, he's so over the top, Jerry Lewis, whatever. And then when Sandler came around, they were like, the halcyon days of Carrey. Can we get back a finer cut Carrey, right? This guy's purely man-child. He doesn't even have the dexterity. There's not the physical, it's, whatever.
Frank Caracci, who
was in a movie directed by.
Okay, yeah. Nice guy.
Very pleasant guy. Yeah, yeah.
The team are nice guys.
I'm such a Sandler fan. That was like, I mean, aside from the fact that someone said, "Do you want to be in a movie?" and I said, "Sure." That was the main incentive of me wanting to be in that film. I'm really curious to see what it's like to work for this guy because his movies were so big to me growing up.
So the thing about Wedding Singer that works for me, and it's why we'll talk about the stuff in Big Daddy that doesn't work as well for me. Wedding Singer is actually genuine, is actually heartfelt, and it finds a sincerity that I think Big Daddy struggles with. But I think
disagree on that, but okay. I love Wedding Singer. I'm not throwing any shade at Wedding Singer. No, I know. I think Big Daddy
is more maudlin, but I do think it works. Whereas Wedding Singer feels earned.
Wedding Singer, part of it is
the emotion.
The two of them are just great. They're both movie stars. They're just they get it. The 80s pastiche is a lot of fun. So like the cartoonish components of like just everyone's hair in the 80s and all that, it all works really
well.
But
also still holds up well. Like that movie's marketing campaign was so much. This is the first retro movie about the 80s.
God, how do you remember that? You were like 9.
Because my brain is stupid. What are you talking about? This is the only stuff I remember.
Look, I remember it too, but I don't. But I'm what, like 8 years older than
Sure.
I don't remember. Things I don't remember marketing campaigns from 1989.
I don't remember how old I am, but I remember taglines from 1999. Yes. But it is like the poster taglines for that movie were like the cell phones were huge.
Yeah,
the hair was even bigger. Like they weren't even pitching the character dynamics.
Grannies were rapping.
Right. Yeah. Remember the 80s, and you're like, and that stuff still actually holds up well in that movie, even though everyone's gone to that well since then.
It's a really lovely movie, is ultimately what it comes down to. And I know that you know. My feelings about Sandler are probably different than both of yours.
What are your feelings about Sandler?
Yeah, we got to get into it.
It feels like
we're talking around this.
We've never done this, and I'll tell you, Griffin, I was saying this to Phil before.
Seems foundational to both of us.
Very much you and so. I, Kenny. Very, in a way that transcends movies.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes.
Right? This is not, Sandler's not a movie star to me. Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore are not movies to me. They're like Major League to me. They are very much parts of my
DNA.
Yeah,
I'm also like, it's like an artistic movement. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is like the Dadaist.
Couldn't agree more.
Wave. You know, it's like this is important to understand.
Couldn't agree more. I have big thoughts
about
Sandler.
The way my relationship to comedy and films are both
so. But we were talking about this before. We have covered Sandler once.
We did.
Okay.
2009.
Oh,
we did Funny.
Right.
We did
Funny. Another one I didn't want to do just in case for some point do Apatow. But a movie I love.
Which you could do.
I love it too.
I think it's pretty fine.
Yeah.
We did a whole episode about that.
Sure.
So we talked about Sandler. We talked about Sandler in the context of a movie that Phil loves. So it's not really this conversation.
Right.
I also know we have also obviously, you know, you can't talk about movies without talking about Safdies and the Uncut Gems of it, which is a movie that Phil also loves. And again, is not really about the Adam Sandler thing. It's a very much, if it's playing with the Adam Sandler personality, you're talking about postmodern, a different kind of version.
He's a big enough movie star that you can never cast him and not be playing with the persona in some way. But I think it's the difference of, is he the main artist of the film? Is he the main author of the film?
I think that's what I'm getting
at. Or is he handing himself over to a filmmaker 100%. And saying, use me in an interesting way?
Now, the other thing that must be mentioned is there's a podcast we love called, or that we've been on several times, we love it called Happily... So well, I don't know. Let's go.
It's a Happy Madison pod,
okay. And they're the best, and they're great, and they're British guys, and they've been wonderful to us.
They have.
We went on there
Grown
twice.
Ups 1 and 2.
Grown Ups 1 and 2.
The duology.
And talked of the third one as well, and infamous third one.
When my thing with later stage Happy Madison changed completely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is, you know, I, like so many people, thought Adam Sandler was incredible up to a point.
Sure.
And then I thought it fell
why
apart.
Why I started rewatching
deep,
stuff.
Then I thought it fell off a cliff like everybody else. And then I watched Grown Ups 1 and I was validated because Grown Ups 1 is deeply terrible.
I don't like it. Yeah.
It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
There are Grown Ups apologists, and
Grown Ups 2 is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Interesting. I still haven't watched 2.
Oh, no. Grown Ups 2 is incredible.
It's the happy you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
Okay. I think I only have like 2 gaps in the filmography now, and that's one of them. And I think I've always avoided it because
you have to watch it.
I don't
so
like Grown Ups
good.
1, and I know people who. Obviously, it was a big hit and whatever, but I'm like, I have friends who vouch for Grown Ups 1.
Those are bad friends.
And so I'm like, why would I believe anyone saying this about Grown Ups 2? But if you're telling me Grown Ups 2 is good, then I'm believing it.
And so
I have one more thing I have to say, though, because we over the course of our podcasting, Sandler has like been this thing. So
there was another thing to talk about.
Jack and Jill. So Grown Ups 2 was the moment I'm like, oh, there's way more going on here than I thought there was.
Okay.
Which is very simply, Sandler doesn't care about being cool. That is his superpower.
Which is great.
That's why his movies are so great.
And his weird anti-cool comes from how little he is concerned, how unself-conscious
he truly
is.
Doesn't
care. It's the thing about the basketball shorts and the oversized t-shirt on the red carpet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, how does he get away with this?
It's not because he's trying to be some kind of,
you
know,
John Fetterman. That he's genuinely not trying to underplay it or to be...
So the other part then, because now the pump was primed a little bit for me with Jack and Jill, a movie that I always avoided because I was frankly scared of it. Like that movie is gross looking.
Sure.
You've seen that movie?
I have.
Masterpiece.
Now here's the thing.
One of the best movies he's ever done and the best movie about siblings I've ever seen.
I'll just say this quickly. We've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
okay.
I
believe I had auditioned for that movie. I cannot remember what character. Maybe something was cut out, but like a day player scene thing, one scene part that I think maybe wasn't even in the final.
Eugenio Derbez's part.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. he was good.
So I read that script, which that was at the point in time where I was like, Sandler's starting to test me. I haven't liked the last 4 maybe or so in a row, but I always want to love a Sandler movie. So I read this script and I was like, this is dog shit. Now the script... I will say was like placeholders.
Okay.
It was so clearly like this movie is sold on the idea of 2 Sandlers, one of them wearing a wig.
Right.
That there were literally pages in the script I remember being like, I don't know, it's like Spade or something. Like true, I remember the descriptions feeling that like this was written during a flight.
Which speaks to your point, Phil.
Yes.
Right.
Which I'll make at some point.
So I went into it with a lot of trepidation. I'm like, the trailer looks unappealing. I read the script. Yeah. It was the laziest fucking thing I've ever read. Right. It confirms people's worst opinions of what the Sandler movies are. And then it is the single weirdest movie-going experience I have ever had in my life, bar none, and I doubt it will ever be surpassed. My friend and I go to see it the Friday it comes out. We go to like the noon showing. My bit with my friends was, I don't think that movie actually exists. I think if you buy a ticket,
it evaporates.
No, Willy Wonka, congratulations. You got us.
Yes, I agree.
You got us. So I said, we got to go to the earlier show.
I couldn't believe it existed either.
So we go to see the Friday, like matinee, the first showing. At the AMC 25 on Times Square.
The giant one, yeah.
The giant one.
Yes.
And they have an IMAX screen. They'd converted their biggest screen to an IMAX screen. But this was still in a period of time where there wasn't a big IMAX movie every 2 weeks.
Sure.
So sometimes you just have to put a normal-sized movie on the IMAX screen. So it was Jack and Jill being screened in IMAX but not in IMAX. Mm-hmm. You're in the biggest theater.
Love it.
And it's not like, oh, they just zoomed in and it was like pixelated. It was just only the center 30% of the screen.
That seems right to me.
Okay.
Well, you got to keep Dugan's vision intact.
So you're just watching this little. It's not the right dimensions. Mm-hmm. It's not the right. It's just a little middle of the screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
the theater, we assume we're going to be some of the only people there because we're seeing it like 11 o'clock on a Friday right before Thanksgiving break, right?
The weirdest.
I know. The theater is
packed
somewhat with a school field trip. Some lunatic has taken a bunch of elementary school. It's like last day before holiday break, you know, and rather than just do the responsible thing, which is play a movie in the classroom, put on some fucking VHS and clock out, they took them to see Jack and Jill. For what educational value, I don't know. But they take them to see Jack and Jill. So it's maybe 80 10-year-olds, like four chaperones. We're in the IMAX screen. The film is only being projected in the center. The movie starts, and over the main speakers, we hear... A woman in a robe stands with a torch above her head. Columbia Pictures.
Oh, no. Oh, you're in the now,
it was,
description?
It was not advertised as such. Someone hit the wrong button.
Do you watch the whole movie like that?
Yep.
It being described to you as well as being
in real
heard?
Time. Yes.
Oh.
The entire...
With a whole group of children.
Did it ruin
Correct.
It?
Correct. Well, I'm like, I didn't know.
Is that the only time you've ever seen it?
Yes.
Oh, watch it again.
But the sanctity, the sanctity of that, like...
You're going to love it.
It was the most fascinating, psychological, like, sort of study of an audience I've ever seen, because it starts up and it's happening throughout, like, the opening credits are, like, the home video footage and saying, like, two children look identical, play in the background. And the way that stuff, it's audio descriptive service, I think is what it's called, ADS. And it's, like, often a track on a DVD, or there'll be special screenings with it advertised as such, or more often... You can get a headset from behind the counter and it just pipes that in. This was over the whole thing. It was not advertised as such. It was truly a mistake. And they try not to overlap with the dialogue. So you have this person with totally flat affect, like Micro Machine style, rapid fire, trying to describe everything happening on screen in between images.
Which is indescribable.
Also.
Of all movies,
yeah.
Here's a film where the premise is exclusively, you all know what Adam Sandler looks like.
Imagine him as a woman.
And they're next to each other.
Yeah.
So it'll just go like, Jack walks up to a broad-shouldered woman in the airport. He turns around. She looks like Jack. Like, it's like, you can't explain these jokes. That's and the moment I think about where I just, it's the greatest moment I've ever experienced. Because my friend turns to me, he goes, we should go out and complain. Yeah. And I went, no, I want to see if it ever gets corrected. Why ruin this, right? I want to see if this ever gets corrected. And if this audience of children ever seems to think this is odd,
strange.
What is the take on the film? What is this? What is this device? This omnipotent narrator. There's the moment where they have the soccer game. As you said, Eugenio Derbez plays Felipe, and he plays his own grandmother, I believe, in the film. Or he plays his own grandfather.
He doesn't play his own grandmother. He might play his own grandfather. But
there's a real old lady who's the grandmother.
Yes. But that's not him, for sure.
Right. So there's the soccer game.
Uh-huh.
And this narrator's trying to time over, not overlap with the dialogue. So sometimes she describes a joke like 30 seconds after it happens. Mm. And sometimes she has to describe a joke 30 seconds before it happens, because that's where the opening is.
It's comedy gold, really.
So she says, she goes, Jill kicks a soccer ball. It hits Felipe's grandmother in the face. 30 seconds later, it happens and the audience explodes.
I mean, listen.
As they should.
This sounds like a better experience.
What? So what is comedy now?
I will not stand for the slander. It's an excellent film.
Okay. I'm just
what
saying,
is comedy now is
a
great
say,
question. I get what you're saying.
I can't say. I enjoyed watching it. I cannot say what I actually think of it.
I really go hard for it on Screen Drafts. Please listen to that.
Sure,
it's a wonderful film, and it really, more than most movies, I think, first of all, it's genuinely hilarious at times, but it really it is. If you don't think the Pacino stuff is funny,
Pacino's performance is incredible.
What world you live in? Like, it is so funny.
Okay, so can I answer the question that was asked 20 minutes ago about what I think of Adam Sandler?
Of course, of course.
This is just the final time to debate Sandler on this.
No, for sure. My whole thing with Adam Sandler is I generally don't like quote unquote dumb humor, broad humor, silly humor. Okay. It's just not really my thing.
You're an erudite man.
And I don't mean to suggest that it's never funny.
A man of letters.
I don't mean to. Yes, I'm a man of letters. Yeah. I think it's just Adam Sandler, his whole shtick when it was like the screaming guy and the whatever on SNL.
Shut up.
All that stuff. Yeah. I was like, sure. Fine. Like, it's just not, it never really spoke to me. Mm-hmm. I see why. I mean, this is going to sound a lot like my feelings about Major League that we had as well.
But you loved Major League.
I liked Major League a lot. potato, potato. Yes. I do think that I see the humor in it. Mm-hmm. I get why the Al Pacino thing is funny. Oh, how could you? But it's also just not my tempo.
It's not your tempo.
So yeah, when I watch Adam Sandler movies, and I mentioned this to you earlier today, Kenny, they all feel very first drafty to me. They all feel sort of like, we haven't really kicked the tires on this, but like, it's Adam Sandler and people like him and he'll do his shtick and people won't care about the fact that like, it makes basically no sense. Mm-hmm. The custody storyline of Big Daddy makes basically no sense. Like, we're just not going
to... People don't care.
I understand that.
Yeah.
I do. So when I watch films like this, I find myself, it just like makes my head hurt.
Sure.
And I just
you can't care about that.
But that's what I was going to say. You almost have to accept it as, if I can get hoity-toity here. No, not even that. I'm like, you have to accept it as like, it's like, it's their Dogma 95. Like that's the style that they have developed. The films are produced under.
I appreciate that.
They are of a piece. Mm-hmm. You can obviously ding them for it if that is not your temperature.
Sure.
But it's like almost like their thing is only natural light. It's like the script can't be too tight. You got to leave room to just let someone show up with a wig and do a funny voice.
Sure. And I also it can't possibly be that the reason you don't like Big Daddy is because the particularities of
the plot fails.
Of the law. It's like you like Legally Blonde, right?
It's one of the reasons.
Legally Blonde's the same idea, right? Blonde is just as silly when it comes to the law part.
It may be not to be devil's advocate here. I think Legally Blonde is maybe a little more invested.
It's silly, but I love the movie. That's my point. I don't care. Liar. Sure. Any movie, any comedy
that's the Supernatural.
Sure, but not the law part. My Cousin Vinny.
It's not a magic law.
Any movie that has ever been taken place, any movie period, but any comedy that's ever taken place in a courtroom is inherently silly and not like the law at all. It's not the law.
I understand what Phil's saying only through the prism of this is not ostensibly a law movie. So when it gets silly with the law, it's maybe less forgivable. I don't feel this way. I'm trying to understand your perspective. No, you know what I'm saying?
I appreciate that.
If you're caught up in a comedy where it's like, these people are making a mockery of this courtroom.
right.
Then you're like, I know what I bought a ticket to. Whereas this movie, you're like, they would never let him keep the kid for this long. It's not even that like the courtroom stuff. I don't care.
I know, Griffin. I know.
10 out of 10. But I'm trying to understand Phil's perspective.
Let me just finish what I was saying, okay? Sure. Not even specific to this particular film.
Yeah.
I do think that I am forgiving of certain Adam Sandler films that go there. As I said, yes. I think The Wedding Singer is a fantastic comedy.
Doesn't go anywhere, but whatever. Yeah.
I mean, but you understand my point, though, which is that there's a lot of buy-ins that are required in an Adam Sandler film.
Deeper than the law is my point about you. I think your point is valid.
Is that it's deeper than the law.
But it's not it's not the fidelity to the real to realism. It's there's something about it that doesn't work for you. And I just can't believe the idea.
One of the problems I have with this film. It's not the only problem.
This movie rules. Can
I dig into my history around this film?
Please, just as sort of a counterpoint to tell you
where I come at this from. I'm the oldest of three children. Mm-hmm. My mother is, will never listen to this podcast, a bit of a snob and was very, very protective about media stuff when I was a kid. So I mostly watched a lot of old sitcoms and cartoon shows and was not allowed to watch a lot of the movies that my contemporaries were growing up with.
Sure.
And that extended to the blockbusters, but it certainly extended to the comedies. And almost even more so, not on grounds of inappropriateness, but on grounds of like, he's not funny. That guy
Your mom decided he's
below
not funny.
Us. Okay. Right. So like Carrie was a guy where it's like, he's an overactor. Carrie's not funny.
Sure.
No. My parents loved Steve Martin, Bill Murray.
I love that about your parents, by the way. That is where parental curation should come in.
Now, my dad loves dumb comedy.
Hey. whatever.
But my mom was sort of like controlling the thermostat there, yeah, right?
I never let my kids watch SpongeBob because I thought it was too gross for them.
Well, that's, I think, it's silly.
And now we've realized that it's brilliant.
We did a 99 on SpongeBob, yes, and I've completely changed my tune and feel right, like a fool.
Right.
But in the moment, yes, I was like, ugh.
I'll say this. So my mom had the same thing with that first wave of Nicktoons. Mm-hmm. And not only was Ren and Stimpy banned for similar reasons, perhaps more fairly. But it extended to all Nicktoons, where she lumped in Doug and Rugrats with that, which are, Doug is like the most milquetoast fucking show in history.
It's the worst.
Kenny went to town on Doug's first movie.
Imagine my mom being like, Doug is too cynical and gross.
No, that's sad for your mom, but I mean,
Doug's just boring.
Kid in a sweater vest who friend zones himself. It's like,
I mean, don't get me started on Doug.
If you want to hear Kenny go to town on Doug, listen to our Doug
first episode.
I can't
go there again.
But I understand
your
perspective,
point.
Right?
At least the point is, he's so inoffensive.
Right, and Doug is banned in our household, right? Okay. Bill Murray and Steve Martin are the two guys that my parents both like and will even let me watch the R-rated movies because they're smart, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We actually find them funny.
Okay.
You can watch these movies. They carry this wave of comedy stars who are coming up in the 90s that my friends are loving. No go.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
No go. This 98, I get at the beginning of that school year, really bad pneumonia. I'm out of school for 2 months. It is a thing where in retrospect, I'm like, my parents must have been vaguely concerned that I might die because I was just in bed for 2 months.
That's a long time. Yeah.
Right. And occasionally I get tests and scans and whatever, and they'd sort of like shrug. I think they were trying to make everything feel very normal to me. I was not in like all consuming pain for most of it.
Sure.
But it was like, you are sick. You cannot go back to school. Mm-hmm. So it was just like 2 months of not seeing other kids, little secret garden boy.
I was going to say drinking Colin from Secret Garden.
Yeah, right. And my mother, who was always so in control of what I could or couldn't watch, that's the moment where she kind of throws her hands up.
Sure.
Oh, wow.
Because it's like, you're home from school for 2 months. It's like fucking lockdown,
well,
right?
It's a pandemic. Exactly. The pandemic is when my son started to watch all these horror movies and I was obsessed with it. Right. I'm like, it's over.
It's over. It's over. There's nothing to fight for anymore.
That's right.
So my mom, it went from being, you know, the rule is if you're home from school, you can watch TV in bed, but it has to be a classic. I'm going to rent a classic. You have to watch a movie with some intelligence. And it's like 2 weeks in, this is done. This is over. So I'm like, I'm going to watch all the things she wouldn't let me watch. And I'm like, I'm watching all the Carrie comedies, right? I finally get to watch all of those.
Sure.
I'm going through the guys who have been like out of bounds. And this is the same year where I discover SNL. I like earlier that year found out SNL existed. And I was like, the fuck? No one told me about this? What are you talking about, right?
Okay.
So I'm watching a lot of SNL on Comedy Central. I'm getting into the 90s, which is the stuff in most regular rerun rotation and the VHS compilations and whatever. I'm getting into Sandler and Spade and all those Farley, Schneider, that whole wave of guys. And then I start watching all the Sandler movies on VHS. So I, in a very quick succession, like watch Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore,
sure,
Wedding Singer. Uh-huh. And I'm like, well, I love this guy. Mom, I got bad news for you.
He's my guy.
He's my guy now. Yeah. And a lot of it was forbidden fruit, but I also was just like, he's doing something different than anyone else. I enjoyed the Jim Carrey movies, but these movies are doing something on a different plane that I can't put my finger on. Part of it's the sloppiness. Part of it's the weird absurdity of them, whatever it is, right? And his movie star persona is so strange, especially because it's so rooted in explosive anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think especially for young children. And I was not a child like this. Yeah. There's something cathartic about watching essentially a child in an adult's body who's able to yell about the stupid things that you are told to behave in relation to, which I think is the root of this whole fucking movie, Big Daddy.
And I don't mean to, I don't mean to cut you off, Griffin. Yeah. I do want to, now that we're hitting Billy Madison.
All this to say, just the one important point. The first time I like get to go to a movie theater again and really leave bed since the time I've been sick is when The Waterboy comes out. It's like my return to civilization. And
like
we go and
Fast 9
see it. Yep.
It's very nice.
It's the return. It's sold out. The audience is fucking, it's like Altamont. You know, it's like people are like fucking jumping on each other. It's insane.
Incredible.
So then when this movie comes out, I'm like, this is my number one favorite movie star. I'm reading in the newspaper that he's now become the number one comedy man in America. This is as anticipated as any movie in the world for me.
So I think your run through, I my true, honest to God, history with Sandler is this. Loved him on SNL, mm-hmm. thought it was a revelation. Things like Aquaman blew my mind. I thought Billy Madison was the funniest movie I'd ever seen
yeah.
in my life. And I thought, and I think it's the funniest movie I've ever seen in my life because of the, I don't, no offense, Phil, I don't think it's dumb. I think it's brilliant. I think it's weird gonzo stuff. Like to me,
exactly.
making the conditioner and the shampoo fight in the tub is dumb, but also wildly bold in Look, a movie like that.
It's Stepfathers. It's Freddy Got Fingered. Yes. It's the biggest joke behind these movies is, can you believe we took studio That's money to at. Do this?
And Freddy Got Fingered, We've Phil talked also about
brilliant. Is brilliant. I think it's brilliant.
So, yeah. I mean, that stuff.
But that's where the first draft stuff kind hardest, of comes into the sensibility it, well, of...
That's why I love Sandler so much, because right. so much of this stuff is the, we have not conformed yes. to comedy, right. to mainstream comedy. So
we're not playing yeah. the game.
So for me, Billy Madison, things like if peeing in your pants is cool on Miles Davis was a wild line to me. Things like the
clown coming back from the dead and the song.
Falling first. That's and then, the hey, moment kids, where it's
I
do, me.
I feel like I think I've I peed seen in Jesus. My pants.
Yeah. Right. I bet you thought that I was dead, yes. but when I fell over, I only broke my leg and I hemorrhaged in the head. It's really funny. Yeah,
really funny.
So that every Phil, successive
really funny.
Every successive comedy he did after that was less and less of this.
Sure.
So
yes.
Happy Gilmore.
Billy Madison was definitely my favorite of the first.
It was the most yes. this thing where it yes. was just gonzo and wild and there was no rules and things that I'd never even considered jokes that like you like it felt like you were on the inside of yeah. every deep inside sure. joke.
It's like the fucking Ramones. You're just like you can get away with only doing like four chords yes. or whatever.
Right. And so that Happy Gilmore mm-hmm. was actually a little bit of a letdown for me because there are jokes like the fake hand, which like I'm crazy about, and Gus's uh-huh. hand and everything like that, and the alligator at the end with Abraham Lincoln. There's so still great, great gonzo shit.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Wedding Singer is a step back for me. Now, in retrospect, it's a great film, but it's a step back. And all of these things he did felt that as he got bigger and bigger, he became more normal and more normal and more normal. And uh-huh. it really kind of upset me. So the reason that I thought Grown Ups 2 and Jack and Jill are yeah. such brilliant films is because they and then everything he's done in the last 10 years yeah. is Netflix shit. It's all this stuff that's like back to the like, we're not taking any notes. Well,
this is why I love Hubie Halloween and Sandy Wexler.
A
couple of the early Netflix movies I really struggle with. I think it took them a little bit to recalibrate.
Well, a little bit to be like, you don't own me, I own you.
Ridiculous Six and fucking Get Over, I will not stand up for. Right? But those two, I think, are back to like absurdist, you know, classic Sandler. Zohan, I think, is pretty great. I'm a it's little okay. terrified to rewatch it politically. But I remember feeling that way in the theater of like, oh, he's doing insane shit again. He's back to just not caring about reality. Mm-hmm. I love this, right? But I think there was that thing of like, Adam, you're going to have to play by the rules a little bit. If you want to keep making movies, you don't want to be Pauly Shore. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get to the fifth one where you're still just silly man child. Well, there has to be some bottom to this. So you see them like, Happy Gilmore, it's like, okay, push a little more towards normal. We put you with Drew Barrymore. There's an actual romance here. And I think it's fascinating that, like, Big Daddy is the – they're filming Big Daddy when Waterboy hits. Mm-hmm. Waterboy is him being like, have I earned a right to do a silly voice movie again? Can I go wackadoo?
And the thing with Waterboy that I still to this day hate.
Yes.
Waterboy feels like a studio comedy to me. Waterboy feels like you almost could have put anybody in that role. Not anybody, sure. but anybody who could do that. You could have almost just swapped in a Rob Schneider and it would have been a very similar movie. There's nothing outside of Kathy Bates' performance. There was nothing that really felt like you're going for it.
I do think it's worth saying too. Big Daddy is still his most successful film domestically.
Right. Is that unadjusted for inflation?
Domestically.
Yeah.
Worldwide, I think Big Daddy is not his biggest. But right. And then when Hotel Transylvania 2 came out, it actually trumped it by about $4 million. Yeah. So that beat it. But it's still his most successful live action film.
And if you adjust for inflation,
It's crazy. By a significant
amount. A country mile.
Yes. It's clear that, like, the Waterboy obviously teed this up, right?
It's one of those weird things where it's just, like, Waterboy was just the moment that I think even the last couple of movies playing on cable rotation had built up a following. Like, it was, like, it was even a little less about that movie and more about just everyone was ready for him
Very
to be.
Spy Who Shagged Me in that way.
Yes.
You know?
We're all here now. And then you're, like, it's weird that that's the one that breaks through to that degree because it is so fucking strange and off-putting in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And then he's got Big Daddy filming when Waterboy comes out and suddenly you're the biggest comedy star in America. And he's got this movie that was meant to be maybe a little bit more of a, do I go further into normal guy? Do I try to find a way to have one foot in each? And it's fascinating that you look, his response right after this is, blank check, I'm making Little Nicky. The most demented film ever made.
You know, what's
and
interesting
it's special
too,
effects and
what
it's
you're,
fucking
what
great.
You're saying in terms of Waterboy is a huge success, so successful in fact, Sony gives him more money on Big Daddy and they actually beef up the Rob Schneider, the weird stuff.
The rare instance of mid-filming being like, we're gonna like
let you off the chain more.
And give you like a 25% budget increase. Yeah. This just became an A movie.
But which is true, which is interesting. And I think, you know, I guess everybody's credit. At some point around Waterboy, I think they realized this guy is no longer for the kids, right? His next movie is going to have to be an everybody movie. Yep, and they made I think Big Daddy is the perfect everybody movie.
It is.
Sure.
You know, I watched it with my son and my daughter who don't agree on shit.
Yes.
And they loved it, both of them.
I do want to give just a little bit of context here so that our, you know, not whatever. 32-year-old Sonny Koufax, played by Adam Sandler, has spent his whole life. I didn't write this, just to be clear, because when you hear how it ends, it's ridiculous. Spent his whole life avoiding responsibility. When his girlfriend dumps him for an older man, he goes, he's got to find a way to prove he's ready to grow up. In a desperate last-ditch attempt, Sonny adopts a 5-year-old child named Julian to impress her. She's not impressed, and he can't return the kid. Uh-oh for Sonny. I didn't know this. So Big Daddy opens on June 25th. Got to do the box office game. You're going to know these because these are all bangers, obviously. But first place makes a shit ton of money. Second place.
Spy Who Shagged Me still?
No. That's third.
That's second place.
I love that you're just playing this blind.
I know. It's second. Phantom Menace is still in the five, right?
That's in five.
Okay.
You've got an animated film in there.
Tarzan?
Yep. That's number two. You've said Austin Powers, and we referred to this other film earlier. Big movie star at the time.
Notting Hill?
No, the other one.
Not General's Daughter.
Yes, General's
Daughter. Wow. Okay.
So that's the five. I'm going to just talk about the 10 for a quick second here because we're talking about. Notting Hill Star Wars is five. Notting Hill is six. The Mummy is seven. Instinct is eight. An Ideal Husband is ninth. Wow. And The Matrix is 10.
It's so absurd when you look at a top 10 like that and you're like classic blockbuster.
Ideal Husband.
Like, you get so lulled into the security of, I guess, every movie on this list is going to be important. Yeah. Oh, right. Instinct exists.
Yeah. But this is all just to say that this movie is an enormous hit.
Enormous.
I mean, it's huge.
And is a very low premise movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because you're talking about, Liar Liar is kind of the movie that studios are trying
to
make.
High concept,
magical, realism, family. That's like the biggest kind of four quadrant comedy is that. Mm-hmm. And then you got guys like Sandler and Myers who are like, they're doing character comedy. Mm-hmm. It's really bit heavy. It's funny wigs and shit. Gags and stunts, right? And this is like the least character-y Sandler has been up to this point in a premise where the hook is just basically a dynamic.
Yeah. Shithead guy gets kid.
Right. And this guy doesn't know how to take care of kid.
You know what the original title for this film was?
Shithead guy gets kid?
No, guy gets kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's oh, that's hilarious.
Which I think is kind of missed.
It is in the playbook.
Big Daddy is a stupid title.
Actually, very dumb. But no, not even a daddy. I think it's interesting. Almost every movie star at some point, they give a test run with a kid. And see if that's a dynamic that works.
Yes.
Especially
with comedy, I think there is that.
Or
that,
action. Like,
well, the action guy. Well, now the action guys have to do a comedy with a kid.
Yeah.
So was Kindergarten Cop the first action that kind of where the action star gets a kid?
I would say basically. Like because it's like I think Arnold at that point is riffing on Eastwood doing the orangutan.
Oh, sure.
That's what he's transmutifying and realizing. Yeah. I know a way to make this even bigger.
Yes, yes.
It's kids.
Yeah. Yes.
And then that becomes like a necessary step of the thing. Yeah. But there also is, with all these A-list comedy guys, there's a point where it's like, the real test is, can you do a family movie? If you do that, your audience is about to explode.
Yeah.
Can Jim Carrey do a movie about being an absentee dad? Robin Williams becomes the king of fucking family comedies, you know?
You see The Rock trying to do it. You see Vin Diesel trying to do it.
Rock's done it. Everybody has tried it. It's for
Jack
that
Black,
reason.
Will Ferrell, all these guys. It's once you've had your couple of more adult hits, it's like, now can you be in a movie where you're with a kid or you have the sensibility of a child?
It is interesting. So
even fucking Tom Cruise does it in Jerry Maguire.
Yes.
Knocks it out of the park. Everybody gets a show.
Which I remember Entertainment Weekly in their summer movie preview talk about dumb things I remember when I can't remember, you know, most people I know by name.
Sure.
We're saying this script could have been a Tom Cruise movie. Like, we had a long list of people who were up for it. It ended up becoming more of a Sandler movie, but this was not
developed. Jim Carrey was in talks for a movie like
Everyone
this.
Everyone was. Leading man was in talks or at least considered for this movie at some point. The premise is just so basic and straightforward. Yeah. You're like, plug a movie star in there and rebuild it.
For sure.
Around their personality.
So the movie's got a $34 million budget. It makes $234 million worldwide. Just a staggering, ridiculous thing. 39% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics, 74 from audiences. So
critics are really now, we have to stop this.
So Ebert's review, 1.5 stars. Yeah. Okay. Big Daddy is a film about a seriously disturbed slacker who adopts a 5-year-old and tutors him in cynicism, cruel practical jokes, and antisocial behavior.
Antisocial behavior is the part I'll never forget.
It's crazy. And then in reference to what you guys were talking about, it said there have been many, many movies using the story that Big Daddy recycles. Chaplin's The Kid uses Jackie Coogan as an urchin. Little Miss Marker has a Little Miss Marker has
kid. You were right about the orangutan.
Shirley Temple and Walter Matthau. Then you've got Jim Belushi's Curly Sue. All had similar elements. What they all had in common were adults that would have made good parents. Big Daddy should be reported to child welfare.
This is the thing. I remember this review because it's like a public service announcement. He's not just saying I hate this movie, but he's like, this is culturally irresponsible, antisocial behavior,
which is one out of every 20 Ebert reviews is like a letter
to protect you.
Very much so.
But then weirdly he'll be like, Paul Blart, 4 stars. Why are people slagging on this? There's actual craft in this film.
Well, okay, so here's a broader question, and I don't know if this is someone that you guys would ever do a miniseries on, but Dennis Dugan.
As I said, we put him in March Madness 1 year because we had a year. We do a March Madness bracket to pick a director we're going to cover. Yes. We let people vote.
All of our listeners know.
So we did this 1 year where one side was all best director winners at the Oscars and one side was all worst director winners at the Razzies.
Yes.
And Dugan was on that. And we thought would have been kind of fun.
Just to walk through this really quick.
I'm interested in the non-Sandler.
Non-Happily Madison. So his career starts with Problem Child. Okay, then
that's a movie.
Brain Donors, don't know that.
That's like a weird sort of attempt to make a modern Marx Brothers, Three Stooges movie.
Okay.
Some people, I think, semi-stand
Now that you say that, I can see the poster, weirdly. Happy Gilmore's after that. Yes. Beverly Hills Ninja. Big Daddy, which was supposed to be a Chris Farley vehicle as well. He was in talks, which totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And if I'm being honest, I don't want to say I might have liked it more, but I'm not sure that, like, because the Chris Farley thing, which is, you know, narrow, to say the least. But I'll just say that, like, him with a kid seems maybe slightly funnier on paper to me.
It's hard to say what Farley would have been because Farley had never
been
the straight guy.
Yes.
Right.
You know,
that's the tough part.
And also romantic and also a lawyer. Like, there's things that I'm not sure.
I mean, not those things. I think he would have figured out. Yeah,
sure. I love Tommy Boy, and the key to Tommy Boy is that it is surprisingly sweet and sincere. Mm-hmm. Yes. But there's something to be said about the fact that, like, Farley, even with the couple of years he had left, could not figure out how to follow that up.
100%.
That, like, Black Sheep and Beverly Hills Ninja, and it, like, immediately he kind of gets the calculation wrong.
I agree.
There's a version of that movie with Farley that could have been incredible, but you wonder if they would have gotten there.
You have to, yeah. The thing, and I think this is actually quite a credit to this movie too. Mm-hmm. This is the first movie. I mean, Wedding Singer, maybe, kind of, not really, where Sandler is playing something approximating a human being.
Yes, yes.
And that in and of itself is somewhat revolutionary for this film. Yeah. To take what's working and say, we also think this thing might work.
Right.
To do that with Farley, of course that would have happened at some point. It's happened with every guy. Yeah. Will Ferrell and Jack Black, and every guy has stripped it down and said, okay, now I'm a person.
Right.
Never seen it, so I don't know if it would have worked.
Yeah. So he does Big Daddy in 99, as we know, Saving Silverman, which is 2001.
A gonzo film.
I've never seen it.
It is bizarre.
National Security in 2003.
It's like a nothing flop.
The Benchwarmers in 2006.
Happy Madison.
Then he's back in the... With I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, You Don't Mess with the Zohan, Grown Ups, Just Go With It, Jack and Jill, Grown Ups 2. Should also be said.
There's a run there where it's like he goes from being one of the four directors in rotation to being the one guy who makes every one.
He has the number four, one. Yeah. He has four Razzie nominations, and we all know how we feel about the Razzies. Yep. They suck. Negative. But he's nominated for Big Daddy, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Uh-huh. He has a double nomination for Just Go With It and Jack and Jill in the same year in 2011, and then Grown Ups 2 gets him another nomination. Okay. I think he wins, actually, my apologies, in 2011 for the Jack and Jill Just Do It.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, that's his Soderbergh. when you have both in the same.
It's his trafficking in Brockovich. But, right. I mean, I bring up Dennis Dugan just because I do think that he's become the guy, right? I think, has he done any of the Netflix ones? I guess not.
He did a Michael Douglas, Diane Keaton, like late in life rom-com recently. It feels like he's sort of
thought he tried to J. Roach himself a little bit too.
It's a light roach. I wouldn't even say it's a full roach.
It's a light roach.
But it does feel like he's doing a little more autumnal.
Yeah. I didn't know this about Dennis Dugan, but he did a shit ton of TV in the like 70s and 80s.
We're talking
Columbo, Rockford Files, Hill Street Blues. Actor. And a TV actor, too. Yeah. 15 episodes of some show called Shadow Chasers. Picket Fences, Chicago Hope, Ally McBeal. Like, he was a go-to guy for a lot of stuff.
I think Griffin made the point earlier. I know he made the point earlier that he said, you know, there are movies that Sandler's the auteur of and movies that Sandler's not the auteur of. And, you know, you'll notice the ones that he's the auteur of are made by directors who don't really do anything else.
Dugan's going to make his days.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Like Karachi, for example, as a counterpoint, was Sandler's like NYU buddy.
Okay.
And there was like a shared sensibility and I think a shared creativity.
Okay.
Which is not to take anything away from Dugan, but I think Dugan's hired to make the trains run on time and not be a Nazi.
Yes. 100%.
Yes.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Is this a better or worse courtroom drama than The Judge?
Better. and a better father-son.
Yeah, no, I agree. I
think the law actually checks out more in this movie.
I would agree as well.
I find this movie more emotionally affecting.
I don't think the law is quite as bad as you do. I mean, the actual courtroom part. Okay, but the actual, I mean, like, I think I'm sold enough. They think he's Kevin. They think he's the real father.
Josh Mostel character is I feel like the thing that bumps for people where it's like, I either fundamentally 30 minutes in go, this doesn't happen. This never happens. You never get to this point. The rest of this movie is built upon a lie.
Wait, the who character?
The Child Protective Services guy.
Oh, the Revolting Blood.
Right.
Yes. I mean,
that's his famous character. Yes. What do you want to say?
Wait, okay. What was that from?
Billy Madison. Oh. I didn't call Billy Madison the Revolting Blood.
That's why I agreed. I wasn't a judgment.
I assumed it was a role. I just didn't know what it was.
Speaking a language you didn't understand.
That being said, your point of like, you either buy into, that's the buy-in of the movie. Yes. And I totally get that, like, you either buy into it or
they don't take the kid away. This guy knows.
And it seems to have just turned a blind eye. He's like, you know what? You can have the kid for a little while.
He doesn't know. No, I mean, I'm not, this is so stupid that we're talking about this, but like, no, he thinks he's Kevin. And he's
no, he thinks he's, I understand that he thinks he's Kevin.
Okay.
But there's the moment midway, not midway, probably a third of the way through the film where he goes to him and he's like, I can't handle this kid anymore. The girlfriend doesn't want the kid. It's all a bust. And that's when the guy and says, well, I think I can find a foster home for him or put him in an orphanage. And that's when Adam's like, well, I don't want to do that. Like, I'll take the kid for as long as until you find a family. And that's when this social worker's like, you know what? I'm going to pretend you never showed up.
That's the moment. That's the moment where I think a lot of people just shut the book and go, ridiculous. That doesn't happen.
No, I think with the guy.
I agree with you.
But that's the buy-in. That's all I'm saying.
That's the buy-in.
But the buy-in is very clear. I think they, and what's his actor's name?
It's Zero Mistel's son.
He's excellent.
Amazing. Yeah.
I love him playing. Yeah. I love him playing like kind of a New York cool guy because he's actually
City Slickers.
He's actually kind of cool. Yes, he is.
And also one of these guys where it's just like, it's the New Yorky thing that Sandler gets right, where it's just like, this guy just, he doesn't want his job to be any more complicated than it needs to be. He's not even bad or negligent as much as it's just like, do you know how many fucking cases I have on my desk? It's easier if I just pretend this conversation never happened and tell myself that you are an equipped father.
Also, Sandler's not coming to him being like, look, I'm beating him. He's just saying like, this is a lot for me. I'm not equipped for this. But look, I don't want him in an orphanage. Right. So he's like, okay, well, we try to place him with a foster family. Yeah. I see that you can handle a weekend. Right. That's all he's saying.
Let's just ride this out.
A weekend. You know, so I love it. I love it. And I love that thing. I love that New York thing he gets right, which is like, let's just pretend this never happened.
Yeah. Okay. It's the moment that
loses you. For a guy from New Hampshire, he really gets
it. It's the moment that loses you, but it is a moment where I'm like, I think that's good characterization. Whether or not you buy the logic of it for what the movie then has to place upon.
I totally buy it.
I'm like, I get this guy, and I credit to Josh Mostel, I think is selling it.
I just want to be very clear. Son. I didn't hate this film, guys. And what you are saying is, as we speak, probably changing my score and is making it go up.
Hell yeah.
But I'll just say that there is stuff. I did find him, and by him I mean Sonny, to be quite unlikable. There's just like, for me, the moment where I was like, dude, is when he fucks up his John Stewart's proposal to Leslie Mann and essentially just like kills that moment.
Who's there at the beginning of the movie? It's showing what a shitty idiot. What a shitty idiot.
He's a shitty guy.
Well, he's a shit. I don't know if he's a shitty guy. And I know this is like, this might be splitting hairs. But he's a shit. I think the point is underneath these layers of shit, he's a great guy.
But also, it's really buried. But I think like a lot of the other Sandler movies, a guy like, let's say, Happy Gilmore, it's like inherently a sweet guy. We lead with him taking care of his grandma. Yeah. He's got this bad side to him, right? It's like he's in conflict. Here we go. Jekyll and Hyde. Yes. Right. Which I think a lot of the Sandler comedies do. That's how they handle his sort of bottled anger rage, you let it pop up in certain points, but you start out with him, hey, thanks, sweet guy, whatever, right? Big Daddy opens with this guy sucks. The opening of this movie is phone call with the dad showing every lie he's saying in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for a job. I'm sleeping in a boat.
Sleeping in a boat, I laughed at.
Funny.
It's 10:45. He hasn't gotten out of bed.
Yeah. What does this guy do for a living? He's still living off this fucking payment, right? Yeah. He's buying stupid things.
He's dating a MAGA girlfriend.
But also,
in real life, but he's also Chrissy Swanson. She's a 10 and he didn't do anything to deserve it. Nothing makes you hate a guy more than that.
That's true. But I am going to argue this is pretty good economic characterization for the beginning of a movie that the first scene we're seeing him exist in real time, not this sort of phone call thing, is the girlfriend waking up immediately angry. This has happened before.
Sure.
The alarm didn't go off. Did he fuck up? No. He decided that she should sleep in because she's too high strung.
It's true.
Yeah. And you're like, there's a warped logic to it, which I think this gets to your point, Kenny. Mm-hmm. Is he a shitty guy? No, he's kind of a shit. There's almost a good intention behind that, but it is so tortured and it is harmful to everyone around him that you're just like, this fucking guy, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
And you start the movie with his home life being like
garbage.
Yeah. And unlike a lot of these comedies and even some later Sandler comedies where the wife is the nag who doesn't get that the guy's chill, she's in the right.
Totally.
It's the only time I'll ever say.
Hey, Christy Swenson's in the right.
But she is in the right. And you're like, God, this guy, really? He's this shitty in this movie?
He is.
He's fucking up this much?
But I'll say this, and I'm not, you know, a Christy Swenson stand by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not sure that her character, the punishment fits the crime at the end of this film, where like, where she gets to be like, the butt of this Hooters joke that is endless in this movie.
The Hooters joke is beneath us to even dignify.
I agree. Let's just move on.
It's not a great, but it is. It is,
and we're actually doing it a kindness by calling it a joke and not a plot thread.
It's a runner,
not one of the overarching thematic concerns.
It is a runner. It is.
Affects two characters.
It's also like it's basically the crux of the Leslie Mann Adam Sandler relationship in this film, right. Which is that she worked at Hooters for a brief time in medical school, and he just continually reminds her of it as her friend on the stand.
Absolutely,
as she's in court. It's just
the thing that holds up the worst in most Sandler comedies of this era are truly regressive. Gender politics.
Yeah.
Right. And they'll sort of be like, but look, Joey Lauren Adams is cool.
Yeah, she is.
We let the one woman be cool.
True.
And she we don't mock because she can hang with the boys.
But there are always these sort of. And they work.
He creates these sort of like straw woman characters that are just.
Punching bags, unfortunately.
Yes. It's not the best thing here. But there's really no defending it, but you know,
Probably plays it better than most of the women who have been onto this role, probably because she's friends.
Sure, 100%. We did we did an episode on 17 again, and we did an episode on Funny People.
She's my favorite actress.
She's fucking great.
She's great.
Like, she really is great. Right. And I just recently watched 40-Year-Old Virgin again. I mean, she's just genuinely a great
actress. One of those things.
This is 40.
No, 40-Year-Old Virgin. Well, she's in it.
Who is she in 40-Year-Old Virgin?
She's the
drunk
chick,
woman.
She's a drunk woman that says, let's get French toast.
She's milkshake.
Wait. She barfs on him.
Who's put the bike in my trunk? That's Elizabeth Banks?
That's Banks.
That's Banks.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. She's not.
I know she is. Yeah. I know she is. Yes.
But she's genuinely funny, and she's also really heartfelt. Like, she is a great, great actor.
Thing to her credit, she's really good with the kid in this movie.
Yes.
It's one of those things that I don't think the film is giving her this at all.
I agree.
But
disagree
she
with you.
Humanizes herself.
Disagree with you strongly.
She humanizes the character by seeing how much she's to fucking holster her contempt for Sonny.
You're wrong.
I'm critical misread.
I'm
trying to give credit to you.
I know you are. The reason I think you're not giving enough credit to the film.
Okay.
It's because it is critical because the kid ends up with her.
You're right. That's true. You're right.
She is his mommy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what?
This film.
It's smart construction.
Yes.
It's smart intentional construction.
Thank you.
And she plays it well.
She plays it perfectly.
But it's
every
it's
moment. She's so mean to Sonny, and she's such a good mother figure. And putting all the Sandler stuff aside.
You're not going to get to see any real screen time between Stuart and the kid. So you need her to seem like a good parent.
You need to feel okay at the end when he's with mommy. And she's good. It is a good flick.
It's a good flick.
I mean, by the way, that point, I do fully agree with both of you on that.
That's a good flick.
It is. Well, no, the Leslie Mann, that it is actually like structured to pay off at the end.
Yes.
It's so jarring in the moment
that
you do start to wonder why they're doing it.
Yeah.
Why they're humanizing this character who is just a walking, you know, sexist joke.
Right.
And it gives so much more to the movie than it needs to. Just it's not the greatest thing in the world, but it is progressive given the time and given the milieu.
Yeah.
Like the scene in the
supermarket has to work.
Well, I was going to talk about the part with Alan Covert and Peter, whose last name I can't remember.
Another thing where it's like, look, you can ding it a little bit, but that's pretty fucking radical for a frat boy comedy in 1999.
Also, Sandler sitting back, chilling out and being like, now there are gay friends.
Yeah, yeah.
No, really gay.
No one is doing that at this point in time.
That's one of the best things in the movie, it
will take some easy pot shots at them as well.
Yep.
But every other comedy, if they're putting a gay character in, it is purely punching bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he has this notion, which I think is partly comedic, but there is like a sense of respect behind it, which is like, can we put gay characters in a movie who are not stereotypical birdcage? Yeah. They're just dudes. They'll sit on the couch and they'll drink the beer.
It's great.
It's perhaps a narrow view.
It's
but
narrow.
What's the guy's name, Peter? What's his name?
It's
hard name to pronounce.
Fuck. It's Peter Dante.
Oh, Peter Dante. That's not
right.
Hard.
And Lachlan is the other one.
And that's the guy. That's the guy who plays the third friend who never.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, so the there's a line. But there's a line in it also, and I love this about this movie too. That is like they've never met a gay person, yeah. Where Kofor talks about his skinny arms, and yes. Peter Dante goes, they're not skinny, they're nice. I love that. It's like, just,
whatever. Right. They're thinking the ultimate kindness is we can write gay guys like us.
Yes,
it is.
Rather than,
this movie opinion. Has two great montages. I mean, listen, you're going to get good shit with just Adam Sandler and a kid, but him just smacking a baseball right into the kid's chest
is
amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this is
that's just great shit. And then I also just love the moment when Julian kills all the pigeons on the roof with the slingshot.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
It's just like little things like that.
Is that the garbage montage?
Yeah, it's the garbage
montage. Soundtrack for this movie, I think, also low-key whips.
Well, yes. I mean, listen, I'm a big fan of garbage, so I was loved
when,
that.
When I Grow Up, is that what that song is? Right. But that montage is so
good. Steve Buscemi is always great in his cameos. I watched Fantasia a lot.
Yeah.
It's great. I don't really understand what's going on with him in the courtroom when him and Schneider are yelling at each other across the courtroom.
Play the hits. Bring him back. That he popped at the beginning. He's got to come back for a curtain call.
It happens in every fucking Sandler movie.
Every character pops at the beginning,
awesome.
Comes back, and yells another thing at the end.
It's so silly and funny. And
right. I have no problem with it. I'm just like,
it's like a Broadway musical. You're like, the guy's backstage. What are you going to do? Not bring him on?
You know, I was
going to say,
it's like The Simpsons. It's like Springfield. Like, it's always like, you just draw.
What are you gonna do?
Half Disco's to be at the church. Why? Right. Why not? Right. Disco's to this thing.
I mean, Buscemi in Wedding Singer is one of my favorite cameos from him.
Should have been Oscar nominated.
He's unbelievable.
Right. But another thing that like the kid is so sweet to him in this, reveal this side of it because Buscemi is largely playing the like kind of irredeemable creep, upsetting guys in these movies,
and even just the way
depressing,
like weaponizing Julian to try to get girls, and then the kid immediately tries to do that to Leslie Mann in the supermarket. He's like, it's okay, you don't have to do it.
Right.
But like, it's that stuff is great. The montage stuff.
The Sprouses are really good in this. Yes. These are good child performances.
They are good.
They're really good.
Yeah. They are so cute and they deliver their lines perfectly.
Yes.
I can't believe they're only like, kids.
You're like, these kids are tiny. No, they can barely speak.
They're five. I have a 5-year old who I love and I think is brilliant. And no, this wouldn't happen.
Can we talk a little bit about Jon Stewart for a second here? Because Jon Stewart in 99 has this film and The Daily Show. He takes over in 99.
Is Playing by Heart the same year or is it 2000?
You really go deep. Playing by Heart is a movie we did.
It's a weird one. We kind of fucked it up. Basically.
Limited release 98, wide 99?
Basically, is the gist of it. Like it barely was in 90. It was like December 29th or some shit like that at 98.
I don't remember how this happened, how he wound up having
I don't remember either, but we covered it.
One of the worst movies
It's a bad movie. But he has that, then he has this, and then, sorry, let me look up when.
Does The Faculty is also 99?
Oh, no.
That's 98.
Daily Show, he starts in January 99.
Okay, so he does start there.
Yes.
So, I mean, ultimately, he knows that's the gig, right?
No, he doesn't.
I think he doesn't. At that point, that thing's like damaged goods.
Yeah. Oh, really?
This is consolation prize for we tried to make you the next late night guy. Yes. It didn't stick.
Oh, that's MTV, right. He had a thing before. Right.
Yes, and there's the whole Larry Sanders arc that is he's going to take over Larry's show. They positioned him as the Leno to Larry Sanders.
That's interesting.
And it was this meta thing of like, this is the guy who in the real world is probably 10 to 15 years away from getting one of these network slots.
That's interesting.
So I think it was that fails. The MTV shows fail.
Right.
Then he's in a little bit of a wilderness. Fucking
Daily Show.
Weinstein signs him to like a 5-movie deal. There's a story that is Weinstein being like, I think he has leading man potential. Mm. And so Playing by Heart and Faculty are like, we're going to start putting him in supporting roles, building up to the Jon Stewart rom-com. Can we make him like American Hugh Grant or whatever it is?
Yes. Which, by the way, they could have.
Right. And I think him taking this movie is similarly like, let me be in a Friends movie playing the normal guy next. Like, I'm just trying to get people used to me being the guy.
He's hedging his bets.
And no one knows the Daily Show is going to become the gig.
And the Daily Show, Phil, you don't remember this. You know, we're in America at the time. Griffin, I don't know if you remember, Craig Kilborn's Daily Show was drastically different.
Yes. It was not a sophisticated show at all. No one was getting actual political theory from that show.
No, it was a spoof of the news.
Right. Why is Jon Stewart actually bothering to explain things? Was like the feeling when the show started. It was truly just Weekend Update for half an hour.
Yeah. And the Man on the Street stuff, which they kept.
How long did he do it for?
Kilborn?
Yeah.
Three years.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And then this wasn't short.
No.
Oh, and by the way, Kilborn was enormous. Like, Kilborn, it was very good for what he did, and he went on to the Late Late Show or whatever it was.
Yeah, he did that and for a while.
Kilborn was on a very, very steep upward trajectory. So there was this, like, maybe Stewart can go on that trajectory.
That's his last hope.
And I think that this stuff you're talking about, these smaller movie roles that we have, was him hedging his bet.
It was.
Maybe I'm going to have to be – I mean, God help him, he could have been Hugh Grant. I totally think he could have.
I think it was two paths where he's basically like, I got one last bite at the apple of being a late night guy.
Right.
Simultaneously, let me start doing supporting parts in movies to see if I can work up to being the dude.
You know who the guy is? You know what the trajectory is for that? That's Greg Kinnear.
Yes.
Greg Kinnear was
Talk Soup.
What Jay Moore tried to do.
Yes.
No, sure.
You know, this is the playbook. Like this,
Where like you can, if you flame out on that, you know, talking head thing, you might be able to become a Greg Kinnear and maybe be, you know, third build in a big movie and get a role find up leading.
But you're not going to be Jim Carrey. Yes. You are funny, you know, non-threatening, light comedy. Handsome leading man.
I mean, he's not bad in this.
I think he's charming in this.
I don't think he's ever been bad.
He always is too. So self-critical of his own movie roles. His entire run has always been, I'm in the worst movies. Yeah. I can't act. I think he's always.
Great. I love him in Half Baked. I just think he's great.
I do too.
Death to Smoochie. I mean,
I do too. That's the one he always throws himself under the bus. But I think he's funny in that. I think he's good in this. I think you see how he could have evolved into
100%.
He ended up doing a better thing, but
for sure. He's very, I mean, listen, we talked about Playing by Heart. He's not good in that, and it's not a good movie.
Yeah.
But he's very watchable. Mm-hmm. He feels like a real human. Like,
he paired with in that movie?
Gillian Anderson,
I believe. Right. That's real snapshot movie coupling. Yes. Yeah.
But he's, again, like, he's not bad in that movie. Yeah. And you watch that film, and then you watch this, and you're like, there is a world where this guy could have been in romantic comedies as a genuinely grounded kind of nebbishy, whatever.
He's never into character comedy, but he could have been that.
He could have been great. I mean, I genuinely think he's not bad in this. Mm-hmm. He shows up at the end, obviously, fan of the Toronto World Series joke at the end.
Joe Carter,
obviously. I do think it's interesting that I have my issues with this poor mother who's died of cancer, who's dumped this kid on someone's doorstep.
It's pretty rough how little effort they spend making her into any sort of tangible human being.
They could have done
dead
so
before
many
the
other
movie
things.
Starts,
yes,
but
still.
Even still, yeah. I mean, as a kid, it was effective for me in getting me locked into the movie. Now I watch it and it feels a little callous. But this scene where you're just door opens, kids here, and then you just explain this kid's life sucks.
Right.
This is like fucking Harry Potter under the staircase. He's miserable, you know?
Yeah. I think there was other ways to do it. It is what it is. It's fine. There's just the fact that, like, at the end of this movie, Jon Stewart has to stand and be like, oh, right, that woman that died of cancer, I had sex with her drunkenly at the World Series in Toronto. It's not a great look.
He doesn't even remember her. He's like, that's not possible.
It's not the best, but, like, guys, come on.
It's a horrendous.
It's not a good look.
It's not good.
It's not good, but also, like, this is Jon Stewart. Like, this is the guy.
This is palatable, to be clear.
Yes, he does. And this is the guy. But this is the guy who's in 8 minutes of the movie. Like, if it were Sandler, it would be far messier.
And agree. And their friend chemistry is good. That's the big thing. Is like, you got 8 minutes at the top. You really need
to sell. The scene on the roof. It's great. Good. I mean, again, I don't mean to keep it, but him calling him at the airport and be like, so your kid's here? And Jon Stewart's like, I guess I'll just say, no, I got it. It's going to be fine. It's like, wait, what? Does anyone like?
Look, the term shoe leather used for like the scenes where a movie crazy. Just has to get through the plot building.
Yeah.
This movie's got like shoe pleather. It's got like shoe cardboard. Like, it's barely going through the effort of even attempting to build something that looks like a shoe.
Yeah, 100%.
Yes.
So we want to hear you. We were going to talk about some of your favorite films of 99 as well, or some merch. I'm not sure how you decided to do this.
Touch a little,
but let's we want to touch on that. Let's just rate this real quick so that we can do this. And
I want to say two final points about this movie to quote or to give credit to Dave Sims, my co-host over on Blank Check, a recent guest. What movie did he do?
Did 2009. He did a Serious Man.
That's Serious Man.
Cool.
But he came on for The Limey as well for 99.
Mystery Man.
And Mystery Man.
Right.
He's been a great guest as well.
Yes.
A thing that he and I talk about a lot is it is that sort of moment where a movie star can open up and become a four quadrant star. Yes. Talking about this thing of you got to do the kid movie. Mm-hmm. You got to do this. I think there's something to the fact that you kind of can't fake chemistry with kids.
It's true.
That like what you're saying, but like, how do you get this fucking performance out of a 5-year old? And it's like, you cast the right 5-year old and you put him with the right person. Yeah. There's only so much manipulation you can do.
Totally.
There are very few Dakota Fannings where they actually seem to just pop out being robots who can make it work for anybody.
Yes.
So there's something to the fact that like he and the kid are genuinely funny together.
Yes.
You genuinely believe he cares about this kid. As much as everyone around him feels like they're behaving irresponsibly, mm-hmm. he sells the moments where he shows enough concern for the kid that you're like, I'm not rooting for him to have the kid.
For sure.
Which is the key to this whole movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And David's like, that's like the thing that finally made George Clooney a movie star was how good he was with kids on ER. It was like the final
turn,
right?
Well, he was pediatrician. That was his whole thing.
Yes.
Which was like...
Yes.
But it's like, you can't fake that. Suddenly this guy, lightning in a bottle, what's this kind? And it's like... Yeah. You can put two actors against each other who hate each other and they can make a scene work.
Yes.
And you understand they're doing their job. The kid thing or an animal or whatever, it does feel like magic. It makes someone and just an unquantifiable movie star. The other thing I'll say is David's daughter is now a year and a half.
Sure.
So still very young, you know, barely verbal, not the age of the kid in this movie. But
boss
like
boss baby age.
The boss baby. Yeah. She's a boss toddler. Almost immediately after she was born, David invoked this movie and the McDonald's breakfast scene to me. It's like, that is now having a child almost immediately, like month three, that is the best depiction of that level of frustration as a parent of I'm failing the kid. I fucked this up. I need you to help me out. And he just talks about, like, David will invoke this so much. He has not gotten into this situation yet. Oh. He's not gotten into a situation even really equivalent to this because he doesn't have a kid who can talk, who can verbal.
Right.
You know, like, it's anything he's experiencing like this is so low level.
Yeah.
But it's like month three, baby on lap. He's like, the second you fuck something up, you feel like Sandler yelling at the McDonald's. And I do
I think
there
might
is.
Know a little bit about
there's,
this.
There's
I might be living it right now. As I look at my texts, I know what's going on here at home. So we should rate it.
Yes.
Okay. So I had never seen this film before. This is my first time watching this film. So I came into this podcast at a 60. Mm. I'm leaving. I'm gonna say 78.
Wow.
Okay.
I feel so. Kenny,
we did it!
Shake your
that
hand.
That was amazing.
I
didn't think we were going to crack 70.
If we got to let 70, alone fly I thought it would be 78.
I thought he'd land on 69 for the joke.
you're in the Nybar quadrant now.
I think that, yes, I think you guys were able to get me over the,
you really like
the hang-ups that I had with some of the plot
stuff. I think you
stuff.
Love this movie.
Well, let's not get crazy here. I don't know how quickly I'm going to be
watching.
I'm going to do
mine real fast before I get murdered. Yeah. I gave it an 85 before the movie. I really love this movie. I'm 85. That's a good number for this movie. I'm going to stick right there. And I think it's great. The one movie we didn't mention that I think is a masterpiece, as I said to you this morning, 50 First Dates. What a brilliant film. The second pairing between between Sandler and Barrymore, part of why I like it so much is it is quite unassuming.
Okay. Yes.
It is not any kind of attempt to reinvent the wheel, though I do think the ending is beyond brilliant, beautiful, and very bold. Go ahead.
I think if we're talking emotionally earnest Sandler in this vein, I'm like, I'm putting it on the spectrum against that. I'm not dinging this movie for not being Billy Madison or Zohan or Sandy Wexler. I'm judging it against your Wedding Singers, your 50 First Dates.
Your top tier.
Yeah.
That's so, not the tier.
No. I'm just saying, which silo?
Okay.
I'm saying, where does this, what tier is this on within that silo of Sandler?
Fair enough.
Right?
Fair enough.
And I think I land around the same place. I think I go like, because if I'm going to give Wedding Singer over a 90, which I would, it's my favorite of this silo. Mm-hmm.
Same. Yep.
Then I think I land on this being 83.
Okay. All right. So. Just because we're wrapping this 99 up, we wanted to sort of we wanted to get some Downtown Griffey News 99 stuff.
Can anyone do? You threw this at me yesterday. I don't say this with any ire, but you were like, by the way, since we're in, we've asked people to come on with their 10s.
We do.
I know this is the fucking show you guys do. at this point, and you've been working on your own list or whatever.
Yeah.
But Jesus Christ, is it like tough?
Yeah, it's a lot of good
movies. You actually start looking at the movies, and you're like, you were saying, Daniel Waters is going to come on with a bunch of French movies you haven't heard of. I couldn't make outro picks.
Yeah, I know.
You're like, I'm only being contrarian if I don't pick 10 of the most seismic.
It's tough.
Yeah. It's tough. I've got a couple things that are like lower tier, but you'll see. My deeper cuts are so not deep.
No, I know. And by the way, like when we end up doing
movies,
it,
I can't not.
There
put
are
on.
A few. That's what I keep struggling with myself, which is like there. That's why, you know, I requested we do a top 25.
Yes.
Because I just top 10. It's what you're saying. Like some movies that I really want to shout out.
Sure.
Might not make the list.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to do like
you can do whatever you
a
want.
Little game time decisioning here.
Okay.
I mean,
we know what number one is, obviously.
Number one, Toy Story 2.
Yes,
the Great American Film.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's unfair. Not a competition.
Yeah.
Apologies to anyone who had to run against Jesse Owens. I'm sorry, it's too late. The record was broken.
Yeah.
I got it down to 12 films that are my contenders, right?
Okay.
And I'm going to do a little shoot off the hip here in order.
Okay.
Because it really, I'd say for the rest of these, you could kind of shake a bag on the day and they could land in different positions.
For sure.
But I think
on this day,
instinct right now,
yes.
And a lot of fucking blank check movies we covered on the show.
It's true.
My instinct right now, Toy Story 2 number one.
Yeah.
Eyes Wide Shut number two.
Oh, wow.
Matrix number three.
Mm-hmm.
Those two feel like they could flip.
Yeah.
Based on the direction of the wind.
Sure.
Then I go Being John Malkovich.
Okay.
Election.
Uh-huh.
Iron Giant.
Hmm.
Talented Mr. Ripley.
Everyone loves it.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
But it is not the same list for everybody, but Talented Ripley is on everybody's Talented Mr. Ripley's on everybody's list.
Yeah.
Then I think I go.
The suspense is killing
I know.
Us.
Galaxy Quest.
Sure.
Also on everyone's
list. Yes.
Magnolia.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing Out the Dead is my deepest cut, and it's a Scorsese
movie. Deepest cut?
That's my deep... But I was I'm lying to myself if I don't include...
It's a great fucking
and
movie.
And the two movies I have looking on the outside, but they're right there, are Sixth Sense and Bowfinger.
Those Both fingers could stand the outside, but the rest of them, excellent.
Those are the 12 for me.
They're all great picks. And listen,
if I'm digging any deeper than that, I'm trying to prove a point, and I don't need to be cool.
I'm just playing Sandler style.
Yeah,
we appreciate you doing the list. I know that you know. Again, it's not easy to do. This podcast has been yes, Kenny.
can we pin it right here? If you want to do merch with him,
no. Do you want to do merch?
If you want to do it, and then you just lock up.
Well,
I'm gonna get out of here.
We're not gonna do merch.
I don't think so.
All right, let's just wrap it up.
Get back into it. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen. You know, 99 was a great year. You could do 25 movies as we're gonna do.
Yeah.
We're just thankful that you came back.
Hey.
That you came and talked to.
So happy
Sandler.
I got in under the wire. I didn't want to do over Zoom, and it finally turned out to be able to do it in person.
Doing this in person, it's so much better.
And
in
I think
person,
a great
you know.
a movie I was very happy to suddenly have thrown out. Mm-hmm. I think it was important to reckon with Sandler that much as one of the big stars of 99. It's important.
Yeah.
Talking about the year culturally.
100%. And I'll say also, you know, we held on to this film for a long time because we wanted to get someone great for it. Obviously, you're, you know, one of our favorites. But also just like to be able to talk about this titan of comedy.
Yeah.
Big deal. Big movie. Mm. The biggest daddy of all. But
There has yet to be a bigger daddy in films.
No, that's true.
But
so happy you love Sandler, Griffin.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Not that you never know with you.
It's
really
those,
you never know with Sandler.
It is one of those things.
It is one of those.
It is.
But
though I do think the tide has turned quite a bit over the last.
I think people.
It's true.
Yes.
8 years.
It's a different
years.
Animal now.
But
more
than
anything,
since he put out and I said this on a different pod. Ever since he put out his stand up, when he put out 100% Fresh, there was just a raft of people being like, I love this man.
It was, I think, the triple header of that, the SNL hosting and Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, we can't really get
SNL hosting was a big one, too.
Yeah, it's those three things.
I mean, there was always this, like, this intellectual lane for Sandler, which was like, I'm always down for the, you know, the highbrow shit. But, like, anything else he does, garbage. Now that has changed a lot.
Yeah, 100%. But I mean, truthfully, this has been having you on the podcast, you know, the few times that you've come on, it's been an absolute blast. You've been so supportive
so
of the
much
podcast.
Fun. Yes. And I've enjoyed becoming friends with you guys through doing
the podcast. I was going to say the same thing. Being your friend is a real honor.
It really, really is. So we thank you so, so much.
Yes. Oh, my pleasure. Truly.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.